Before we get started, a special thank you is in order to our friends over at Stanley Customs. Stanley Customs creates amazing custom sports figurines for all you athletes out there. Right now, our listeners will get 15% off their order, and all interviewees will get 25% off their order simply by going to Stanley_Customs on Instagram and telling them that Globally Ballin sent you. Thank you. Hey, everyone, and thank you for joining us, and welcome back to the Globally Ballin podcast. We appreciate your support and have a special interview and episode for you today. So sit back, relax, and enjoy learning about sports and opportunities around the world. Here comes the music. I gotta let you go.
He goes, I'll give you $750,000 a year to sign with us.
Without right even now, showing off.
He goes, don't even walk over to the field.
Because I had no idea that my passport was even expired.
Let me tell you, I sent out 6,000 emails.
Gentlemen, how do you use a celebrity for good? You know, up until that point, most of us, as athletes, were taught how to use the celebrity to manipulate, to get a girl, to get famous, to get whatever it is.
Had a couple guys get robbed at gunpoint, and one of them was just like, Jay, get me out.
Actually broke my neck. I was paralyzed from the waist down, and I was never supposed to walk again, much less be able to play football again.
We're hours away from kind of the nearest hospital. He ended up losing his leg over it.
You finished the game with a broken hand?
Yeah, I finished the game.
I'm Rio 2016 silver medalist and Asian Games 2018 gold medalist.
I don't think a lot of people know the opportunities there are actually to play overseas, especially in the women's category.
There are some who would still keep their 9-to-5 jobs because the pay for being an athlete isn't enough.
Don't complain when we look like idiots abroad in these big tournaments.
What league or country gave you the best pay contract-wise?
Probably Turkey my last season.
Okay. For this episode, we have guest Meghna Reddy, who is a rhythmic gymnast from India. And so a lot of you probably listening right now go, I don't know anything about rhythmic gymnastics. Yeah, no, neither did I. And that's what makes this episode so fun. We're going to get a look at not just the sport, but we're able to, in the interview, dive into some deeper things about sports in India. We get to revisit the question that continues to come back up because I think it's fascinating and I have yet to find a good answer for it, and that's how does population connect to the success of an international sport, or how does population connect to the success of a country in international sports? Obviously, India being so highly populated, why is it that they're in the situation that they're in for this particular sport? You should also know, even if you've never heard of it or know much about it, it doesn't mean it's not popular in certain areas, and Meghna's going to talk about some of those areas. It's huge in some places, and so it's not a sport that maybe you're familiar with, but that doesn't mean it's not a big deal. And so let's see what else we dive into. This interesting aspect of the motivation you need when it feels like you're all alone. This is interesting and different and weird. So Meghna is, I'm not going to give it all away, but she's a pioneer of the sport in India, and it's a one person sport, not on a big squad. So you train a lot of times by yourself, or at least not a whole lot of other people. And she's going to give you some examples of when she was essentially all alone, except for a couple of really important people here and there. And we discuss what's that loneliness like when it feels like it's just you going after a dream only you can see? And what kind of motivation does it take to be able to continue to go in and day out? And so if you don't know anything about the sport, or you think you're not interested in the sport, give the interview a chance, because it's going to be more than just rhythmic gymnastics. There's a lot more to it. There's the motivation that Meghna has that makes it different. The way that she looks at it that makes it a little different. How she compares herself to other potential Olympians in a country that doesn't fully acknowledge the sport yet. What gives her motivation to continue to try to get better and better and to compete and to be successful in the sport and to still represent a country the likes of which haven't really fully acknowledge the sport yet. All of that and more is in this episode. So enjoy our episode with Meghna Reddy as she talks not only rhythmic gymnastics in India and around the world, but also a lot of motivation, loneliness when it comes to training, the support of a family, which became really important, and a whole lot of other stuff. So enjoy the episode here with Meghna Reddy. But before we do that, there's a couple of reminders I got to give you. First, the social media. You can always find Globally Ballin on facebook.com/globallyballin, Instagram at globallyballinofficial, and Twitter at globallyballin. In addition, you can now find us on Patreon at patreon.com/globallyballin. We have a bunch of stuff on there. For as little as $2 a month, there's platforms for you. Go ahead and check that out if you haven't already, but otherwise you can always reach us on those social media links. Continue to keep an eye out for our recent episodes. And finally, if you enjoyed the show, a rating on Apple Podcasts as well as maybe a short review is huge for us. It really is. It helps get the word out. And obviously, I'm a firm believer that this word is a word that needs to get out. So any of those things that you could do, follow us on the social media, maybe a rating, maybe a review, and check out Patreon at least. All of those things would be greatly appreciated. So thank you and enjoy the show.
Hello.
Hello, this is Aaron.
Hi,
how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Good, thank you for joining me. I know the time difference is a little bit difficult. That's probably the hardest part about these interviews is trying to figure out the times to work perfectly.
Yeah, I can imagine. I think especially towards Asia and everything, it's even worse, right?
Central Asia is the worst, just because if you go to the Far East, it's you know, 10 a.m. Mm-hmm. here is 10 p.m., so it's easy. But Central Asia gets really hard.
Yeah.
Okay, so to start off, we'll have you introduce who you are and what you do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My name is Meghna Gundlapalli, and I'm from India, and I am a rhythmic gymnast. I am part of the Indian national team. I've been part of the Indian national team for almost 5 years now. I've been competing for India since 2015. I have gone for a number of club competitions, FIG tournaments, which are like they're called club tournaments, basically. And other than this, I've also competed in high-level competitions like the Asian Championship, the World Cups, the World Championship. And I think most recently, I was the only Indian who was taking part in rhythmic gymnastics at the 2018 Commonwealth Games.
So the Commonwealth Games, who's that? Who participates in that? Is that a regional thing?
No. So the Commonwealth Games are basically like all the Commonwealth countries, like UK, we have Australia, Canada, Cyprus, Malaysia, Singapore, and India. And so it's basically like... the countries that were ruled by Britain, they were collectively known as the Commonwealth countries. So this competition, it's like a multi-sport event. So we have all the sports, we have all the sports happening at the same time. So they're basically like the Olympics. They happen every 4 years, but only for the Commonwealth countries.
So you were the only one from India to participate in rhythmic gymnastics for that?
Yes, in 2018, I was the only Indian gymnast who was there, rhythmic gymnast.
Was that because a lack of interest in India or just because they only took one? Or how does that happen?
So we have like our Indian Olympic Association, they allot like quotas for each sport. So like, you know, gymnastic had, I think, 9 quotas, like the whole of gymnastics. So that is like artistic, men's artistic, women's artistic, and rhythmic. So because we were allotted only a certain number of, you know, places, like, you know, a certain number of athletes who could be sent, the Indian Olympic Association gets to decide, like, how many athletes they want to send from which sport. So like for rhythmic gymnastic, they gave only one spot. Because rhythmic gymnastic in India is, overall, it's not a very popular game. And, like, you know, the results seen at, like, an international level had not been so great in the past years. So since I started competing, the results have been coming a little better. Like, my ranking is coming better. And, like, you know, India is not at the last position anymore. Otherwise, previously, like, you know, if you look at the World Cups and World Championship and the competitions that India participated in, we used to always be in the bottom ranking. So, you know, even the Olympic Association was like, you know, they were not showing so much of interest because, like, we were not able to give the results.
So this is an Olympic sport though, correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so you're the best in India?
Yes. Currently, okay. I'm the number one in India.
Number one in a country that, you know, you said it was getting better, but it's still a lower tier country, correct?
Yes. Yes, exactly.
What about your surrounding regional countries in Central Asia? Is it a regional thing that's kind of slowly developing into rhythmic gymnastics, or is it India alone in that area?
No, but I wouldn't say it's India alone, but also it is not all of the Asian countries, because if you see, China is a really strong country in rhythmic gymnastics. So is Korea, so is Japan, so is, like, you know, now all of these countries are coming up. So, like, you know, countries like India, Indonesia, the Philippines, Vietnam, all these countries, rhythmic gymnastics is still developing. But at the same time, we also have other countries from Asia that are in high ranking in this sport.
So I have seen rhythmic gymnastics before. Part of, you know, being in Global Ball, and I have to watch a lot of stuff. Like, I have to be at least semi-familiar with as many things as possible. What would you say sets it apart and makes it a sport that there's an attainable level of talent? So when you're watching things like gymnastics, I can't do flips on the balance beam, but I know that if you can, that's a good thing, right? So what is it about rhythmic gymnastics that separates a good performance from a poor performance?
So I would like to consider rhythmic gymnastics as a performance sport, you know? So it has a lot of similarities to ballet, or, like, you know, even theater, you can say. Because when we perform, we perform with four different apparatus. That's the hoop, ball, clubs, and ribbon. And we perform these four apparatus, like, you know, we make a routine to a music of 1 minute, 30 seconds. So in that 1 minute, 30 seconds, we need to choose a music which we can express, which kind of tells our style. And we have to, like, tell a story. We have to build a story in that 1 minute, 30 seconds. So I would say that, you know, it's a lot like a performance sport where you have to, we have to convey your emotions. You have to convey your story just with the movements that you do. So I think that's what sets rhythmic gymnastics apart the most.
So do you think that this would be something then, as at least for the common sports fan, if they're not familiar with rhythmic gymnastics, it's something that takes a little bit of time to understand what you're watching and what makes a good performance and what doesn't?
I mean, if you want to go into the technical aspect of it, then yeah, you need a lot of time to understand it. But like, you know, it's up to the person who's looking at it, you know, like how they connect with the athlete, or, like, you know, how they connect with the routine that's being performed. Like, if they listen to a music they're familiar with, or if the music is something that, you know, they know or they like, you know, they can connect easily and they would, like, you know, find that more beautiful. So I think another big part in rhythmic gymnastics is it can be very subjective.
I was going to say that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, like, one person might like a certain type of music and, like, you know, they get more attracted towards that kind of that kind of an athlete. But also it depends on how the athlete conveys their emotions, you know, conveys the story and how well they can do it. Like, without showing that, you know, it's difficult, or it is, like, you know, without showing that, you know, we are putting in much effort. It needs to look, like, effortless. It needs to look flawless when we are performing it.
So I want to talk about subjectivism a little bit when it comes to international sports. You know, when you watch something like a swim race, whoever gets to the end first wins. I mean, it's pretty easy.
Yeah.
But when there's subjective scoring, do you think in general that hurts a sport? Or do you think it's more of a necessary evil? Or how do you view the difference in very concrete results versus more of a subjective scoring?
I think that is actually kind of like a difficult question, because, like, you know, that is something that we can absolutely not, you know, avoid in rhythmic gymnastics. Okay, like, that is necessary. And we have, and, like, you know, to overcome that, we have, like, a huge number of judges that sit. So, like, you know, for every single apparatus, we have almost 12 judges who are sitting, right? So we have two different parts. So there is, like, you know, the difficulty and the execution. So in difficulty, we have four judges, and in execution, we have four judges. So, like, you know, the eight judges are sitting there only for one apparatus, for one girl, for one routine. So you can imagine, like, you know, they're trying to you know, the more number of people that are there, the more results we get, and we can get a better average out of that. So, I mean, they are trying, there are, like, you know, rules and regulations and everything which we need to follow to make sure that, you know, the subjectiveness is kind of reduced. But also, I think at a certain point, it is, like, unavoidable.
I would agree. I think it is unavoidable, and I think the more judges you have, the more that that's at least solved or at least leveled out.
Yes, exactly.
What does training require to be a top-tier rhythmic gymnast?
So the biggest thing for rhythmic gymnastics is, I think, like, the repetitions. We perform only 1 minute 30 seconds, right? Like, each apparatus is 1 minute 30 seconds, so that is, like, a total of 6 minutes that we do. So when we compete, it's only 6 minutes that we are competing. But within that 6 minutes, we need to make sure that we are perfect, like, to the point. Like, we need to know the number of steps we are taking in the routine. We need to know how many times we breathe in and breathe out. And, you know, all of that needs to be controlled, and it has to be very calculated. So the best way to get that is obviously through repetitions. And, like, you know, the more and more you repeat, the better the muscle memory gets. And in training, so, and the more number of mistakes you make in the training, the better it is, because you know what not to do when you're in competition.
So, okay, so you said India's kind of hasn't quite fully adopted it yet. What are some of the countries where rhythmic gymnastics is at least a pretty big deal?
I think it's the biggest in Russia. So in Russia, it's a very big deal. All across Europe, it's a pretty big deal, because it has a lot of influence of ballet in it. And ballet has kind of primarily been, you know, more associated to the European part of the world.
The Russian ballet, so, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, the Russian ballet, and then, like, even the English ballet and everything. So I guess in Europe, it's pretty popular. In US also, it's been coming up, because, like, they've had athletes competing in the Olympics for almost quite some time now.
Well, yeah, we try to do everything.
Yeah. So I think in the Asian countries also, like, you can see people, like, as far as I remember, like, the first time that I saw rhythmic gymnastics in the Olympics was at the 2012 London Olympics. And, like, ever since then, I have been seeing athletes from China, from Japan, and from Korea who have been taking part in the Olympics as well. So I think it is starting to develop. I mean, it has already started to develop in Asia, and I think it's just getting a little more momentum now.
What would be, do you think, a realistic timeline before India shows up in the Olympics for this?
It depends on, like, you know, the kind of athletes that are brought up. Because since I started gymnastics, because when I started gymnastics, it was not a very big thing. And I didn't have a coach when I first started. I used to look at YouTube videos, and then, like, you know, I used to kind of do it on my own. And I had to train outside, like, internationally for most of my career, you know, because we don't have that high level coaches that we need to be able to get a good world ranking. So when I first started, I had all of these problems, but now I'm starting to see that, you know, my seniors who used to compete when I started, they have retired, and then they started coaching, and their students are coming up pretty well. So, like, I would say, like, the under 8, under 10 kids who are there, they are starting to like, shape up really well. So I think first it would the first step towards promoting the sport in India, and also seeing that, you know, India is getting better, would be to start winning medals at, like, you know, any international level competitions.
Would you consider yourself a pioneer in the sport in India?
Yes, I think I would, because, I mean, India has been in rhythmic gymnastics for the past 25 years, actually, but there have never been, like, you know, major results. Like, India has been participating, and India has been, like, you know, competing, but I don't think they were as recognized as they are right now, because you know, when I started going international, right? So I started my coachings internationally, and then I started competing in a lot more international tournaments. So people recognize me when, like, you know, when they say my name, they say from India, they recognize who I am. So yes, I would definitely say I'm one of the pioneers for rhythmic gymnastics.
Doesn't it seem odd, at least it does to me, with a country that's third most populated, I think, country that's the third most populated.
I think it's second right now.
Is it second or third?
Yes.
Either way, top up there still has living pioneers of a sport. Like, I don't know. For me, that seems weird that a country that's so highly populated still has a young pioneer of the sport. Like, what has taken them so long to adopt that sport? I think we've talked before in the past, how does population connect to international sporting success? And, you know, what do you have to say about something like that?
So, I mean, in India, I believe that, you know, when one sport shows result in an international level, like, you know, it doesn't have to be like, you know, whole sport. It's just one athlete who shows the result. That kind of just, after that, the sport kind of just, I would say, explodes in India. So take badminton, for example. If you would have seen, like, you know, I think maybe 10, 15 years. I don't know. I'm not sure of the exact timeline. But, like, you know, if you would have seen in the past, it was not that popular. So from the beginning, cricket had always been famous in India. It was always cricket or tennis that was more popular. But badminton was not so much. And then we have a really good, he's an amazing coach. He's a high-level coach. He's produced, like, Olympians and medalists. And he changed the entire system of badminton. And his students started winning medals internationally, and that changed the complete outlook of badminton in India. India, now badminton has become such a craze in India that it's actually, like, you know, competing with cricket in India. So you can imagine, you know, the kind of difference just winning one medal made for a sport. So I think since rhythmic gymnastics has not shown that kind of a result yet, people are not that aware.
Would you also agree, though, that, you know, sports like badminton and rhythmic gymnastics have a low overhead as far as training and stuff like that, especially, I would assume, rhythmic gymnastics? Doesn't that bode some sort of a potential benefit for a country that's going to invest in a sport?
Yeah, I mean, again, if you want people to come in and invest in a sport, like, you know, all when someone is investing, all what they want is, like, the results, right? So I guess, like, you know, unless and until they see results, they are not willing to invest for it.
Yeah, no, and I think that's right. And that kind of brings me on to what I want to talk about in more general when it comes to international competitions. And that's how do you see the role of a government as far as funding these international endeavors? Some people would argue that a country really, there's no point to it. There's the costs far outweigh the benefits. Where do you believe the country's role is when it comes to funding international competitions?
I think, like, you know, even if they're not able to fund them, I think they should really support them, and they should, like, you know, try and send them for more and more international competitions. Because, I mean, the more exposure you get, the more competitions you play, the better you get at it. Especially in a sport like gymnastics, where, you know, repetition is the key, and, like, experience is what can make a difference between a champion and between a, you know, regular player or a normal player. So, like, experience is a thing that differentiates between these two. And the only way one can get experience is, you know, not by how many years they've been training, but by how many competitions they've played. I think that's the first step that would be into that should go into developing a sport in the country. Like, the more number of competitions you send, the more, especially for the small kids, you know, like, the more competitions they play, the more exposure they get, you know, the less they become afraid of competing, the less they become afraid of, like, you know, the whole stage fright kind of a thing.
One great general question I love to ask anybody who's either in the Olympics or, you know, a high level international competitor is, well, we talk about funding and all this other stuff. What if we just got rid of them? I mean, what's the value of having the Olympics? Let's start at the top. What do you see as the overall value of the Olympics?
I think the Olympics, it will look at, like, you know, it would just be like this kind of a stage which is like the highest stage that you can represent your country. And I mean, if you're being honest, that's one of the biggest reason why any athlete would, you know, start competing. I mean, it was the reason why I started competing. It was the reason why I found passion in sport, because I wanted to represent my nation at a stage that is, like, you know, bigger than something that is, like, you know, bigger than myself. So representing not just yourself, but, like, you know, a whole nation of people at a world stage, and that to a, you know, such a high level competition such as the Olympics, I think that's what would drive any athlete towards performing better, or, like, you know, breaking their own records or outperforming themselves. Because if they don't have something that they want to achieve towards, then it would just be like, you know, it would be like just going for computer training every day. You're like, you know, just training, you're going to the gym, you're working out, you're training every day, but you're not really working towards anything.
Looking into the future here, imagining that you went to the Olympics and let's say you medaled in it. What would that mean to you to be on the stage and represent India in a sport like that?
So for me, it's always, it's never been about winning a medal. It has always been about bringing India on the map of rhythmic gymnastics. Because especially in a country that where the sport is still developing, that I think that would be a huge first step for the country, for the sport in that country towards, you know, being recognized as an actual competitor at an international stage. Because like before, previously, I actually remember when I first started competing, like, you know, we used to go for competitions, but people used to, if I can say, you know, not take me seriously because I was from India. So they would be like, okay, it's just another gymnast from India, because they have seen for the last 20 years, right? The Indian gymnasts are coming, but they're not any, they're not showing any results or anything. So that, that was the kind of mindset that was there when I first started competing. People were just like, you know, okay, India is just here to compete and go. But that's not what I wanted to do. I wanted to make them see that India can also be a competitor in this sport where, especially, you know, a sport which is not really, if I can say, kind of like an Indian style, you know.
What do you mean by that?
Like I said, rhythmic gymnastics has a lot of influence of ballet, right? And ballet is not a primary dance, if I can say, in India.
Sure. I guess what I wanted to finish on, and then I'll give you a chance, you know, if there's anything else you want to talk about. But one other thing is that if you're, let's say it gets to the Olympics and you're an Olympian in rhythmic gymnastics, is there some sort of, I don't know, disappointment you feel in any way looking at Olympians from other sports that are more recognized in the country? You know, do you in your head put yourself on a podium between not only are we only Olympians, but I'm an Olympian in a sport that not as many care about? I mean, do you look at other Olympians and tier them in your head, if that makes sense?
I don't think I would, because, I mean, I don't, because I actually, I don't know how to say it, but like, I wouldn't think of it like that, you know? I mean, when people say you're an Olympian, they say you're an Olympian, right? They don't say from which sport you are or what sport you have played or like, you know, what the background is. All they look at is like the title of being an Olympian. So, I think that's the biggest thing for any athlete, right? To be called an Olympian.
Right. And so then there would be no concern for you about, you know, any sort of lack of respect for your medal, again, saying that you won or whatever, or just being the Olympian. There wouldn't be any concern about, you know, lack of respect.
No, I don't think I would be worried about lack of respect, because I think the people in general would respect the title of being an Olympian or of being a medalist rather than seeing from which sport you are.
I'm probably revealing a lot about myself to the listeners about how maybe I'm a little concerned about what people think. But I was just curious. I don't know, because I know there's some sports that maybe it's just me in your head, you tier higher than others. I don't know if that's the case. It might be because when I look and watch somebody play a sport, I think, well, I probably can do that. And then I look at if with enough practice, and then I look at somebody else and go, there is no way with however much time, whatever, I would never be able to do that. And so, you know, maybe that's just me, but fair or not, sometimes I tear that in my head. Now, anything else you think you want to talk about or mention about rhythmic gymnastics or your journey in the sport that we haven't talked about? You are easily the first voice in rhythmic gymnastics on the show.
Oh, okay. That's a real honor for me, because I think that was my dream from the beginning. Because when I first started, like, you know, what inspired me was to represent my country. It was to be a kind of role model for the kids who can, you know, they can look up to one day and then say, like, you know, yeah, I want to be like her, or like, you know, I want to follow my dreams like her. Because I actually started rhythmic gymnastics when I was like around 11 and a half, and that's pretty we can say old for this sport. So, like, you know, people said I wouldn't get far. Like, my own coach, actually, in the beginning, he said that, you know, I would not be able to make it far in this sport. But I think that kind of drove me towards actually, you know, pushing myself to, you know, pushing myself over the limit to actually achieve what I have achieved till date.
Now, a practical question has come up, and that's financing as an Olympian is always an interesting question because I'm not an Olympian, but I assume most of it is you're getting sponsorships and that kind of thing. How does that form more of a hiccup for an athlete or an Olympian or potential Olympian in a sport that is just kind of growing in the country?
Yeah, so I have actually had a lot of problem with, you know, sponsorship and the financial part of the sport. So my parents, they have actually supported me from the beginning. They were the ones who financed my trainings, my competitions, everything, like, for the past 10 years. And, like, you know, they were really supportive of it, of me, like, I would say, giving up my studies for this period of time and, like, pursuing my passion in sports. And they have financed everything from the beginning. So it is quite hard to get sponsorship in the sport, especially since it's very new in India and, like, you know, people don't know about it. So it has been hard. It has been a hard journey to get the required finances for competitions or even for training. But for the last 2 years, there is this foundation here in India. It's called the Go Sports Foundation. And they have been sponsoring me. They have been supporting me for the past 2 years. They have been helping me with the sports sciences. They have got me in touch with some of the best nutritionists, physiotherapists, psychologists, like, in the country, who have actually helped me in, like, you know, looking at sports in a more scientific way. So I think right now, you know, after the Commonwealth Games, actually, like, you know, people in India also started recognizing me, and, like, you know, with the support from Go Sports, it has become a little bit easier, I would say. It's not completely, you know, solved, but it's become a little bit easier on my parents and, like, you know, to help me get my trainings or to get in touch with coaches. Because from the beginning, I was, I would say, kind of by myself. I never had one particular coach for rhythmic gymnastics. So the coach I started with, he was an artistic coach, and he was a really good coach. He supported me throughout the journey, but he passed away in 2018, right before the Commonwealth Games. And after that, it was like, you know, there was nobody in India who was supporting me, and it kind of got hard during that time. But again, thankfully, that was the time when, you know, Go Sports offered me the scholarship. And ever since then, they became kind of like my support system. You know, not only my sponsors, but, like, I can turn to them for, like, you know, any help that I need regarding my trainings, regarding the coaches, regarding my, you know, mental health, physical health, anything, any questions I had, I could always turn to them.
And to feel, you know, to feel even semi-alone in your passion in a country that's as populated as India is must just amplify the sense of loneliness a little bit, right? Or even a lot. It's gotta be.
I think it's been a lot, because as far as I remember, like, you know, I used to train by myself in the stadiums. Like, even when I used to go to the stadium, it used to be just me in the entire stadium. It was a huge indoor stadium that I train at here in Hyderabad. That's the city I live in. And it used to just be me and my mom used to accompany me to my trainings. And, like, you know, I used to train there, and all the you know, maids and the watchmen who were there at the stadium, they used to come and they used to sit and they used to, like, you know, nicely talk to me, and that was the kind of company I had. So I think it was kind of hard to be doing it by myself, but again, at the end of the day, like, you know, when you see the results coming and when you see that, you know, people are getting inspired by your story, this all kind of feels like worth it.
This is really important. I just want, just for a second, because, you know, when people push in their passion and stuff, it's hard to keep going if you don't have the support. And that level of loneliness,
exactly.
I can't imagine being in a country like that, so populated, so busy, and then you go to an empty gym with just your mom watching. That it would feel so alone, and it would feel so difficult to keep going. Like, what's the point? It's just my mom here and a couple of people stopping to watch. So congratulations on where you've gotten then, because that is amazing. Now, there is one thing you said, and I gotta use a stereotype, and sometimes these can be dangerous, so hang on for a second. The stereotype we have for India and some of the East Asian countries is education is everything, you know. Everything. And you noted that your parents kind of allowed you to step away from that to keep pushing.
Exactly.
So that's a big deal, isn't it?
Yes, it was a huge deal, because my father always had an interest in sport, but he never got into sports. And I think I'm the first, no, I am definitely the first one from my entire family, like, you know, mom's side, dad's side, entire family, who actually got into sports. So, and this is all thanks to my dad. He's been in like the business and HR side of business for like his entire life. And this is how, like, you know, he likes to put it. He's like, you know, he's seen so many people and, like, you know, he's seen so many people working and so many different kinds of people that, you know, when I started showing interest in sport, he told me that, you know, studies are not going to go anywhere. Right. I mean, I can take an exam at any age. I can take an exam at when I'm 30 or when I'm 40. But this sport is such a thing where you cannot you cannot continue it lifelong. Right. Once you lose this time, you cannot get it back if you want to do something in sport. So I think that was that's something that I would remember for my entire life, because, like, you know, if it wasn't for him, if it wasn't for his thought process, like, you know, this way, I probably wouldn't have taken up sport as professionally. Because, I mean, I was only 11 years when I started. So, like, I used to love going for trainings. I had the passion for doing it. But, like, you know, back then, I did not know about all of this. So
your story, it really is. And I didn't know kind of going into it, but your story truly is a spotlight for motivation, passion, and family support. It's amazing. It really is.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Okay.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. It was really wonderful talking to you.
Thank you.
This episode is also brought to you by our friends over at Creating Young Minds. Creating Young Minds is a nonprofit out of Lewisville, Texas, brought to you by Dr. Shira Ackerman and Coach Mathis Crowder. Creating Young Minds strives to bring success to the lives of young men in ways in which they may have not reached that success otherwise. One of the ways in which they do this is through their professional basketball team, the Lewisville Yellow Jackets, who play in TBL or the Basketball League. Make sure you go check out Creating Young Minds on all major platforms, including Facebook and LinkedIn. I encourage you to dive more into the mission of Creating Young Minds as they strive to bring the European model of basketball to the United States. Thank you. So I hope you guys enjoyed that interview. I can honestly say I'm beyond pleased with the way that interview worked. I went in blind. I didn't know anything about rhythmic gymnastics. Like I said in the interview, sometimes I gotta, you know, when there's so many people we talk to, sports we cover, all this kind of thing, I gotta learn. And so I did watch a little bit. Didn't help, because I still didn't know what I was watching, basically. But I was beyond pleased with the way the interview went. Magna was a great interviewee, and she allowed for some deeper conversation, which I thought was so awesome. And you know, getting into that whole idea of training alone, which I'm not athletic enough to even speak to the motivation needed for training, because I don't do that anyway. But to train by yourself for a dream that isn't necessarily really recognized by even your country for the most part, no teammates, just you, sometimes your mom in the stands watching, and she said, what, the cleaning ladies coming and watching too. The motivation you need to do that day in, day out, put school on the back burner to try and accomplish this, that is very significant. I can't even do it when people are watching and people are ready to see, you know, hoping to see me succeed. I still don't have the motivation to do it. And so to do it when nobody's watching is just amazing. And I think that's why I hope some of you athletes that know nothing about rhythmic gymnastics listen, because you would have gained something from this. You would have gained a story of somebody from the other side of the world who has to train by herself just like you, who has to train without the eyes on her. Now the eyes are on her a little bit more, but has had to train by themselves with a dream that only they can see day in, day out. The loneliness that she felt, you felt, I'm sure. Now that paradox of walking off the insanely busy and high densely populated streets of India only to go into an empty gym to train by yourself, I'm sure that paradox made the loneliness feel even higher than maybe we would on our own, but it's still that loneliness that you are familiar with, at least on some scale. And so we get to learn from stories on the other side of the world in sports we've never played, maybe, or watched for some of us. And yet we learn that these athletes are going through the same thing or similar things that you are. You can learn from them. That's why we bring on athletes. That's why we bring on coaches and agents, because they have stories and insight that we can all relate to. Well, you all can relate to. Again, not an athlete speaking to you. You all can relate to. You all can learn from. You all can grow because of. So there's a lot more in there, obviously. I want to thank Meghna for her time and her answers and insight and everything we got to get through. So thank you, Meghna. Thank you, all of you, for listening. And you will hear again from us next week. Hey, everybody. Thank you again for getting through another episode. We really appreciate it. I just want to quick redirect you to where you can find us one more time to kind of close out this whole episode. You can find us at facebook.com/globallyballin, Twitter at globallyballin, Instagram at globallyballinofficial. The name was taken. And patreon.com/globallyballin again. What you can find there is all of these episodes music-free, as well as ad-free, and a bunch of other tiers that offer you a lot of other stuff. There is a ton of content available for you that you are not getting here that's out there on the Patreon page. So if you want to check that out, that would be great. And then, of course, again, if you like the show, we would really appreciate a rating and a review wherever you listen. I know I normally suggest Apple Podcasts, but if there's a way, you know, if you listen to it somewhere else and there's a way to rate it, that would be great as well. But any of that is very, very helpful and very much appreciated. It does take a lot of work putting these things together and editing them up and making it all mesh together and getting our interviews lined up and all this. So it takes a lot, but we really believe in it, and we encourage you, if you believe in it too, doing one of those things to help us out would be fantastic. Otherwise, simply you listening to our episodes coming out is a huge blessing to us. So thank you very much for supporting the show, and you'll get an episode from us here in the coming days.